Excellent. Okay. Okay. So, just to introduce this, I'm Alexander Freund. I'm here in Guadalajara, Mexico, at the 15th International Oral History Conference, and I'm interviewing Miroslav Vajk from the Czech Republic.
Mm-hmm.
Or yours, call yourself Mirek.
Mirek, yeah, it's Mirek.
Okay. About oral history in the Czech Republic, you know, the sort of the history of it and current state of the art and future development.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can just say a few words about your own work and what you've been doing, what your position in the Czech Republic is in Prague, and so on.
Okay. I started my professional career like the teacher at first. It was before the 1989. And I studied the history and Czech language, but I couldn't finish before 1989, and I could finish this my study after the 1989. But everything changed in Czech Republic, not only Czech Republic, in East Europe. In 1992, it was quite funny how I had somewhere Václav Havel who had a lecture and who said that nobody asked him about the interview with the Občanské Forum, what was created from the opposition and on one side and communist functionaries on the other side, that there will be dialogue in the crucial days. Nobody asked about the audio. So immediately after it, I write a paper, a letter to Václav Havel. And after the 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I got a response, an answer that someone from his office sent me this audio. And it was funny because I had it, and I wanted to write a book about the Velvet Revolution in Czechoslovakia. It's just idea only. So, but it was the first step that I wanted to gather some oral sources. And it was funny because then they published all the transcripts, and in the introduction Václav Havel said that there were only two, like institutional, or one institution and one man, who asked this one. Institute for Contemporary History in Prague and me, like Mirek Vaněk. Nobody this time. It was in 1992. After publishing the book, one day called me the director of the contemporary history in Prague, that he got some calling from the Václav Havel institutes. He was like president of the institutes, that I am trying to do something, and they would like to collaborate with me. I think the Academy of Science wanted to collaborate with me. I was still teacher on the small kids and to 15, and it's quite funny. And one day they told me you could work here, it's the place for you. And I started my career in the Institute for Contemporary History in 1992, like the junior research. Then I'm, after 3-4 years, I'm a senior researcher. It means that there is a different two different research. Then is the Academy of Science, one umbrella. The second, next, is the university system. There is the Academy of Science is more on the research. This university is more like for the teaching. And in 1998, I wanted to. I miss the students. I miss the people. I wanted to. So what I got, I wanted to sell out that. It was a lot of experience in the big history. It's events, and it was so quick process. And I started the teaching, and it was in 1998 when I started the Olomouc University. Then I came to Prague for the philosophical faculty, then for the faculty of humanities, where I'm still teaching. Now we opened the MA program for oral history, contemporary history. But this is quite good. We plan to do a study program for the students. So, yeah, and the position now, I am a director of the Center of Oral History in Prague, which is like department of the Institute of Contemporary History, Academy of Science. And the second position, because I have a full-time job now, is that I am a director of the institute. It's a department of the Philosophical Faculty, Oral History, Contemporary History. It's a quite difficult because we have... my idea was to create something between the academy, and it's a little bit dangerous because you are a little bit in vacuum, and it's with the money, and it's the quite difficult process. So I have these two positions, and we founded a center of Oral History 2000 after the first book on Oral History in Czech Republic. And we started a member of the International IOHI in 2002, and immediately after my trip to Sydney, I decided to found the Czech Oral History Association, which was my dream. And it was first thinking about that we could try to manage the Congress too. It was one idea. I had a bad sleeping, and if I am not sleep, I the idea comes to in my head, and I don't know why. It's quite funny. So we founded the Czech Oral History Association in 2007 in January, and now the association had 30 institutions like the universities, archives, museums. I don't know, institution like smaller one, bigger one, and around now 100 personal, like the personal members. So, and now we will host the next conference.
Oh, okay. that's an amazing career in oral history, both for you personally and for the Czech Oral History Association. I would like to know more about the sort of the beginnings of oral history in the broadest sense, I guess, in the Czech Republic. You know about how Poland has a long tradition, but there's also this tradition of ethnography. Uh-huh. In Canada, for example, ethnographers did interviews as early as the 1890s. So is there anything like that storytelling, memories?
Yeah. Of course, there were the first attempt which we caught. The beginning of the middle of the 60s, when our colleagues were like historians, and there will be the attempt of the folklorists too. The folklorists focused on the individual lives, and then. Focus more about the differences between the villages and towns or cities. There is some couple of the good projects, almost without the political sense. It's like liberal a little bit, but the results are without the results because nothing is survived during this period. I don't know why. The second, but the historian started with the like oral history in 60s, and there were only two groups which they interviewed, the members who founded the Communist Party in Czechoslovakia in 1924, and this was this first groups, and the second groups were the people who were like the partisans in the Second World War. Both, it will be useful, this it's useful that it was very ideological, but still it was useful if we had the results. But we are without it, because they did it some transcript, something was on the audio, but they didn't use it like the oral history. They use it only for the confirmed their idea. They put some not to the archive, to the shelf somewhere. Nobody knew where is it. So there is one man from the military archive told me that in their shelves it was a lot of recorded tapes. Nobody knew what's on. Yeah, but it's without, because of the magnetism there, they lost everything. Oh. So it was the problem that they were not able to survive, to archive and digitalize, for example, in the 70s and 80s. It was like a technical problem. The methodological problem was that they used only the people who they in their ideology. It means that it was members of Communist Party who support the Communist Party. If there were some communists who left, for example, the Communist Party, he were rubber from the list of this interview. So, and it's one thing, and it's the same with the partisan. They use only the people who were the members of the Communist Party, not the others. They were partisan without the membership of the party, of course. So it was the bad. And I see the third problems, the theoretical, methodological problems, that they collected the interviews and memories like the historians on one side, but there were the bureaucrats, the ideologists from communist regions and organization. And the third part was asked about the written memories, and they use it everything like the same source. What cannot be said. If you will have a time for the writing, it's different than if you are asked about the memories, of course. So, but still, we are without this one. So. Mm-hmm. And it was the 60s. After the 60s, after the Warsaw Pact invasion, we celebrated 40 years. There was the quite big problem with this one, because everything was organized by Communist Party. They were control everything, and it was very dangerous to record it. It was very independent research, and because you cannot go to the official archives, you cannot do nothing, because you are without the sources. You cannot. And I know, nobody tried to do it. So maybe that was the problem with the techniques too. The people were stressed about the system, because it was big experience, a bad experience. We had half of a million Russian soldiers in our small country, the tanks, and it was good time, or it was the time for the dissidents, but it was only 2,000. But the society was afraid that this was very, very bad time, because it was like broken, and it was difficult, because they believed the communist functionaries who bring some idea with the socialism and with the human face, and then they saw that they didn't know nothing, and they were the first who pressed the society back to the strong Marxism like the 50s, for example. So it was very dangerous, and maybe it's a first trying. And after the 1989, I think that there will be the attempt of some NGO organization, gender, and there was the Gypsy, more like anthropologist attempt, and maybe some social sciences, and the people who collected the memories of Jews there. But this started like VR started in the middle of the 90s. We didn't know each other about us, and they finished, I mean, gender studies or Jewish studies, that they finished only I say that, but with the bracket, it's a collecting of the interviews. We wanted to more, we wanted to analyze this one, and we interpret it with our knowledge from the books, from the archives, and put together and bring some new ideas about the way. And my personal way, why I use the oral history, is that I spent my life with very bad region, which was the one of the worst region in the world, because there was the bad environment, and it is, I said, because only that we wanted to move from the region, like the people who knows about the condition, but the system stopped it. We cannot move. It was like the second Iron Curtain inside our Czech Republic. And after the 1989, I wanted to study the archival sources about this, but who decided about it, how they did it. And I found in the Central Archives only some small notes that the doctors, teachers, and some other groups couldn't move. And I didn't know how. And if everything was telephone, and everything was different way, and I needed to to get the interview, how they did it. Mm. And I got the answer through the interview. I used for my first book the oral sources include the written sources. It was my first touch is the oral, and I saw and I thought how it's important for us.
Mm-hmm. It seems that at your institute, oral history is looked at in a very sophisticated way. What would you say could Canadians learn from sort of the Czech approach to oral history? You come to it with a certain history and also a certain intellectual background,
mm-hmm.
very Central and West European intellectual approach to history. And so what could Canadians, in this case, mm-hmm. this is our audience, what do you think they could learn from you?
Yeah, I think that it's my question to the colleagues here, that I see that our way is more like the academical, like because we see that we need the both. We need the written documents, but it's a very, very balancing about it. It's a very, because they produced the communist regime, we need the memory. And because we were so pressed by the conservative historians who don't believe us and who were quite, it was big, small battles and fights, that we wanted to show them that it's an intellectual thing too, that it's the academical way too. So maybe that we are under this little bit more like the academical, that we wanted to show that we can find everything that you can find the sources, that we archiving everything, and it's a very visible how we go in our research. Every attempt are described very, very. There is the treatment between the like the normal standards. But now I think last 2 years, like there are the NGO. What I think that they are good work. They are did good work. They use the interview like for the help for the some minorities. It's a little bit similar like in the general view in the world. It means that there were good project about the people who lost their houses after the flood in 1998-2002. They are the program for the gypsies. They are the program for the some people who lost the works, jobs. So I think that this, so like on NGO projects, but and then there are like see the third ways, which little bit stressed me. It's a Czech journalist who used the oral history like only for the illustration. They create before the interview their picture, what they wanted to say, and they used the only part, the cutting. That's the horrible things. They cutting the interview only the place which they fit in on the older story, and because it's after the every revolution, I think, because they changed the system. Now a lot of people were like rightists. Now it's a totally different movement. Like not now. It's a little bit. It's a go back to the some center, but and they were not able to say that on the, for example, old regime was something what was good, what was the profit for the people,
mm-hmm.
because I don't believe that the regimes are totally bad.
Yeah.
I think that bad is the people who are doing this one, but sometimes it can be 5%, but you have to say 5% were okay for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's we are now surprised how many people combine the both the systems, and how I disappointed with the like capitalism, you know, workers who are not so educated, who have not chance to adapt for the new condition, and it's a very difficult. So, but your question was that you can see the three like the levels. I think that the NGO and these small projects are very well, and the people are. Some projects collaborated with us. They ask about the advices and etc., etc. We are teaching. It means that we are creating new students who will be able to do it. There are a lot of people from the journalist faculty too. I think that we can a little bit change the journalist thing. But still, what they did, I am not sure. I am a little bit afraid, and it's quite counterproductive, because if I wanted to do some interview with, for example, with former communists or if with the people who are a little bit balanced about it, the first question are if I am a journalist. If I say yes, they refuse everything. So now we have 3-4 places which are the bigger one, like a center, like the university in Olomouc, Charles University in Prague, and one anthropology center in Brno. There is the ethnology too, ethnology institute and anthropology institute in Brno. So we are a little bit like it's a quite covered the small country.
All right, my last question is, where do you see oral history going? What are sort of major issues right now? What are the major projects that confront oral historians in the Czech Republic? Mm-hmm.
When we founded the Czech Oral History Association, we set ourselves that we have three main aims. And I think the first one was bring the knowledge about the oral history to the schools and teaching, and bring the new perspective for the how feel the memory, how feel the history, that it's not black and white word and this one. It's now we are teaching on a couple of universities. We manage the program. I think that we finished this. The second was that we focus on the people who are on the edge, like the people who are not mainstream, the minorities, like the. But we had to do the first step, that we concentrated on the big politician for both sides of the society, like communist and functionalist. And now we are going to step by step in understanding the society, the ordinary, the brackets, people who were lived there, because there are some general view that our society was black and white, that we are without a life, without a move, but it's not true. It's not. It wrote the historians who in the beginning of the 90s, who didn't touch the society. It was the communists who privileged only the communist propaganda and wrote about the communist decision making and blah blah blah. The second were the dissidents historians and the historians from exile who were focused on the dissidents, on or anti-elites, but same like the communist historians, forgot on the ordinary people, if I can say like this. And nobody. So our attempt is go deep to the society, understanding generation problem, gender problem, and etc. etc. And the last one, I remember well, the Alexander von Platow, that how he told me, you needed to compare more, go to the group, and I was on some workshop in Bulgaria. It was in some small villages. I had a lot of time for my thinking, and I was without the phones, without the internet, and I got an idea what about it. We could put together one grant, and it was 2 years, and now we finish the application. We sent 1 week before my coming here to EU projects, like, and we would like to focus on the problems among the former communist countries. Mm-hmm. We would like to know about us from the each side, and then we apply with the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary, Poland, Romania, and East Germany. It means the states which were in the Warsaw Pact and which were the monetary. It's a economy. I don't know the economy block something.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the main meaning why we do it. So we would like to go this way. It means that teaching go to the next projects, like the academic, or I don't know how to say, and this is collaboration with our states. I think that it's what I feel like the most important, because we influence some NGO and some small historians, independent historians, who can ask us about some advices. We are for it, the center. But this one is what I feel like the main. And extra, we get the organizing of the 16th conference in Prague. So
yeah.
A lot of work.
Great. Thank you very much. Is there anything else that you think Canadians should know about oral history in the Czech Republic? Anything that we haven't covered?
I don't know a lot about the Canadian oral history, but I know one of my best friends from North America. He's a Canadian, but he studied in Emory in Atlanta. Then he's in Boston area, and we discuss a lot of maybe 3, 4, 5 years about the oral history. What could be inspirative? He has an idea about the Cold War, but not from the some academic perspective, through the normal people. And it's the main point was that I saw some movie for the kids, like the Canadian American movie, something Iron Giant or something like that. The movie stressed the people about the Soviet bloc.
Uh-huh.
And I started laughing, and I think we had the same, but American, Canadian, German stressed me, like in my childhood. What could be the good project? How we feel each other, and what would stress us, and how the propaganda used this same form for the kids, and maybe that it wasn't like the for the kids, but how influenced me. I had a horrible nightmares, and he had the same. It was very, and because I think that he's a Canadian, he's a very very clever. So he's a hero. So. He's a great man.
Could probably inspire all kinds of new international and transatlantic projects.
Yeah, it could be, but I don't want to say like the academic theory. What's the Cold War? It's a lot of books, but it's on some small cases, small pictures show what was, and I think that it has a power.
Uh-huh.
Because still I remember every day, everything.
Yeah,
and it was the moment that we got through the cinema, the small movie. I forgot the movie, but I think that we will see together today, and maybe that you could get the name of the film.
Oh, right.
Because it's horrible.
Yeah.
And we had a say.
Great, well, thank you very much, and I hope to see you in Prague.
Say hello in Canada.
Yeah, in 2010.
Where I'm from, right, from Canada, from Vancouver or? From
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg.
Yes.
Jets. I like the hockey.
That's right, yeah, except I haven't been there for a long time.
Yeah.
Great, okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.